Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Freddie Malloy Show. Thanks for tuning in. Gosh, there's so many cynics in this country. Huh? This hour is sponsored by Anthony Leppert. His message, China has an economic plan and it is working. Wouldn't it be great if we did too? that's true. That's true. They have a great economic plan, and our capitalists want to be just like their capitalists. That's what they're working toward. Well, I'll tell you what. We woke up this morning, as we do every morning at 6 o'clock, to get Molly's breakfast and start the day and get her off to school. And, of course, I turned on ABC to watch the wedding. And I thought it was the royal wedding. I thought it was a very happy, brief moment with all the crap, all the death and destruction and drones and hurricanes and tornadoes and riots and bloody revolutions and teabaggers and Donald the Rooster Trump and, you know, just the constant unending cacophony of garbage and crap and clattering and clanging and ugliness and meanness and hatred and religious insanity. And that's just on my program. No, just kidding. With all of that, you know, just to take a break. And that's what it was for me. Molly finished up breakfast and everything about 20 till 7. She has to leave. Kathy takes her at 7 and off they go. And we sat there and watched it. About 20 minutes of it before she had to go. So be as cynical as you want. And, it, of course, it's c'est moi, who always says things, quoting the French philosopher Denis Diderot, man will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. I understand that. And, of course, in the real world, I believe that. But there's a fantasy world, too, isn't there? Maybe it's because I have an almost seven-year-old, and she reads fairy tales. And not fairy tales. I mean, she does a lot of reading, this kid. But she loves the fairy tales. And it seems to be something that I would imagine all kids are born with. You think? The fantasy and the fun and the mystery and... No? You don't think so, huh? Okay. Well, I thought it was very happy, and I enjoyed watching. I especially liked Prince Harry. Harry is a trip. And Kate and Will, I call them Kate and Will. Kate and Will were a great we're a great pair. Okay, go ahead. Just be cynical. That's right. I don't blame you. I'm cynical too. But for a moment. And then, of course, switched out of that and went to the devastation across the South. It is now the bloodiest day where it concerns tornadoes since the 1930s. The death toll now is up to, what is it, Kathy? 328 people dead. Hundreds upon hundreds injured. Entire towns just crushed, wiped out. And all those sad sights of the devastated South, you know, I'll slip into cynic mode for a moment. I can get very heartbroken about the devastation down here. The death. They're pulling people, still discovering bodies. It's awful. Just awful. And watching the local governors and politicians desperately needing and finally asking for federal help. I mean, it's difficult for me to process that. You know, I watch some of these smarmy bastards down here. I'm talking about the whites. Now, this has nothing to do with the death and the destruction and the families that have been utterly and absolutely crushed to the ground. This has to do, what I'm talking about now, the politicians down here, the white politicians, who take great sport in doing their let's dance on the Negro routine. That they do constantly. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. And the local politicians down here who, on the state level, and even members of Congress who pander to this birther crap. And the ones who send emails to each other with Obama and his family made to look like chimps. Just the kind of racist crap that you know is so deeply ingrained in this country to the extent that we will never escape from it. Never, never, ever. So here they are, all those people who mock and denigrate not just this president, but the Union, United States. Talking about secession, talking about this, talking about that. Well, let me ask these white southern governors just a quick question. Where are your goddamn bootstraps now, boys? Huh? You've got thousands upon thousands of people who have been crushed, devastated, ripped to pieces, destroyed. Where's your social safety nets here in the South? Go ahead, keep cutting the budgets. Cut the budgets for emergency management stuff. Cut the budgets for first responders. Cut the budgets for people who come to the rescue when something like this happens. Cut the budgets for your local meteorological organizations. Go ahead, slash and burn. And then when something like this happens, I'm surprised you don't just choke on your arrogance and your disdain for the, federal government and the socialist imposter in the White House, huh? Is it improper of me to bring this up now? Sure, of course it is. Very improper. But I'm watching this today, and I'm seeing Obama comes to the South, and he's walking down the streets of these absolutely devastated towns and villages and cities in the South, death and destruction all around him, looking not a whole lot unlike the devastation in Japan or the devastation in New Orleans or the devastation in Haiti or any place. Surrounded by these white politicians who 24 hours before these storms mock and laugh at and denigrate and give the political middle finger to anything having to do with the federal government or Barack Obama. So let a horrendous tragedy strike. Where do these people turn? Why don't you all make a phone call to Rick Perry, governor of Texas? Ask him for some help. You want to do that? How about getting a hold of Bobby Jindal down in, Paiush Jindal down in Louisiana? Why don't you ask him, what about the freak, this disgusting half-human down in Florida? Why not call him and ask? No, you don't do that, do you, governors? You go to the federal government. You go to the Obama administration. And for a few brief moments, you don't give a goddamn where he's born, do you?
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
The hour. The top of the next hour, 10 Eastern, we're going to be joined by Nicole Sandler, radio talk show host. Her website, radioornot.com, and of course, there's NicoleSandler.com. As you know, Nicole attended a town hall meeting with her member of Congress, Alan West, and wound up in jail after being manhandled and, I think, maced. I've heard both ways. We'll talk to her tonight about, half an hour or so. Nicole Sandler, so stick around. Roz writes, I caught a bit of that groveling for aid on television today, too, Mike, and these southern governors who only want small governments, don't want the rich to pay taxes. Well, how do they expect to get the handouts they now come begging for hat in hand? There would be no money in the rainy day can for them. I bet they feel stupid now. It pays not to burn one's bridges. Besides, the victims of all this need all the help they can get right now. Roz. Yeah, that's the part to me that is so terrible. Just so... It makes me feel sick. I mean, literally, it makes me feel ill, physically ill, sick. You know, we rode that storm out because it did not smash into the area in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains where we live. It passed to the north of us where it killed 13 people. It passed to the south of us where it did all kinds of damage. And like I told you, I think it was, Thursday or Wednesday? When were the storms, Kathy? Wednesday? In watching it on the radar, it was almost like there was a corridor right in the middle of this horrendous line of F5 tornadoes, 200-plus mile-an-hour tornadoes. There was a corridor that opened up. And we and a lot of other people were in that corridor. Almost the entire city of Atlanta was in that corridor. And there was no damage. Right? The next morning, when Kathy left to take Molly to school, you know, we agreed she left a little bit early because there's no telling how many trees to be down, how many power lines, nothing. And when the pictures started appearing on television of this horrendous devastation, hundreds of people dead, thousands injured, lives just absolutely wiped out from a standpoint of... from the standpoint of all your possessions. And in so many areas of the South where this thing hit, people are dirt poor. They may have been unemployed. They may have been just struggling to make ends meet. Wiped out. But little bit, I don't know how that sounds. I really don't care. I'm just trying to state an obvious truth. What little few possessions a lot of folks that were in the paths of these killers had, wiped out, destroyed, gone. And my feeling about that, I think people that vote Republican, let's step out of the tragedy for a minute. People who vote Republican, going all the way back 30 years ago to the so-called Reagan Democrats, were just providing the conservatives in this country with the rope that the conservatives were going to turn around and just beat the living hell out of the people that put them in office. I don't think we need any proof of that. It's right in front of our eyes. And I'm also talking about conservative Democrats, people like Bill Clinton, who guaranteed that certain areas of the country would wind up in absolute poverty with his damnable NAFTA. So a lot of these people, while you can say that they have responsibility because they send these sons of bitches to Washington or into their state houses, okay, that's equally true. But to see how badly they're hurting now because of the decisions made by their leaders. And, of course, their leaders have said to them, you know, vote for me because they're trying to take Jesus out of the classroom. They've already taken him out of the classroom. Now they're trying to take him out of the government. Vote for me so that the queers don't come and teach your children. Vote for me. So, I mean, just on and on. All these BS, crappy, stupid-ass reasons to get elected to public office. And then when something like this happens, what do the folks have to fall back on? Nothing. And the governors and the politicians, the ones who talk about secession and, boy, I hate big government. I'll tell you what. Well, you rat bastards, where's the first place you go for help? You wish it's all. Wouldn't this be a good time for Andrew Breitbart, that piece of human scum, to do one of his famous videos? I'll tell you what, Andrew, why don't you go down into the tornado-devastated South and see if you can pull a scam on one of the up-north relief agencies that have come down there to help. Why don't you do that? Why don't you take your hidden camera, whatever the hell it is you use, and see if you can catch one of the FEMA workers smoking on the job or something, you piece of human scum. These people in our country, in our society, that continue to drive these nails right into the heart of everything that might be decent, ought to be hanged. I really do think that. I think people who disrupt and try to destroy efforts by honest people to do good work are devils. They should be hanged, whoever they are. You think? Bastards. So in the process, the people who live in the areas that are devastated, in this case, the swath across the South, regardless of their fundamental religion, that seems to constrict their lives even more, regardless of the politicians they send to Washington that treat them like dirt, regardless of all that, you know, they're still people. They still have families, and some of them have hopes and dreams. I don't know. If you travel through the rural South, it's hard to find hopes and dreams, but that's kind of an arrogant view on my part. Everybody has hopes and dreams, right? But when you have spent a number of years in an area of the country where the poverty or the willful ignorance but the crazed devotion to religions that just beat you into the ground, when you see enough of that, you, I don't know, you either become totally cynical or you develop some kind of a sad compassion. I guess I've arrived at both places at the same time, I guess. But the ones that turn my stomach are the politicians and the religious freaks who take this kind of rural southern ignorance and lead it right into a blind alley. Just take these people, and instead of working on education, they fill their head with religious garbage. Instead of working on trying to explain to people in these pockets of ignorance all over in this case, the South. I'm sure it's like this in the rest of the country. I'm talking about the region that I live in. Instead of trying to educate and do away with these pockets of hideous ignorance, they don't. They pander to it. The leaders pander to it. You ought to attend the school board meeting. I mean, you pick a county in the rural South, any county, and go to a school board meeting. Dear God. So this insistence in this part of the country, the willful ignorance on the part of people, you know, they have these huge enemies, people of color, huge enemies, gay folk, huge enemies. Socialism, huge enemies. Great big monsters that stalk across their land before the tornadoes ever come. Telling them about all the monsters and the terrible things that are going to happen to them if they deviate even the least bit away from what their psychotic preachers tell them or their rat bastard politicians tell them. You step out of line, boy! Devil gonna get you. I mean, just on and on and on. And I have to say, some of the most poignant scenes for me, watching as local and national camera crews go into these devastated areas, just devastated. And you listen to the people talk about how, if it wouldn't have been for Jesus, I'd be dead right now. If it wouldn't have been, you know, God protected me. And you just want to scream at them. I mean, are you saying that God sent this horror into your neighborhood, your town, because he's a sick bastard who likes to play games like this? And some of you, this God of yours decided to butcher on the spot, and some of you, while you were huddling in your bathrooms with a mattress over your head, you honestly believed that it was the hand of some kind of a creepy psycho God who spared you? Is this the same God who killed your neighbors across the street? It's maddening. It's just maddening. You know, sometimes, believe it or not, you know, I try to ignore this like it's not my life. If these people want to live these lives of just willful desperation and ignorance and superstition, it's none of my business. But I'm human as anybody else, and when I see this kind of devastation here, and I see people who are weeping and crying and clutching onto each other, I can't help it. Even though I know that if there was more focus on education, more focus on science, more focus on rational politics, less of this obsessive eating of this filthy religious garbage that just permeates this part of the country, then these disasters would have less of a chance, I think, of being so devastating. These are not acts of God. I don't give a damn what the insurance companies say. These are acts of nature. It happens. And if you're intelligent enough to or you're not willfully ignorant, if you cast aside your ignorance and say, okay, I live in a part of the country that is stricken with tornadoes constantly in the spring. Constantly. The fact that they are monster tornadoes now is kind of irrelevant. I live in a part of the country where this stuff happens. So what do I do? Do I pray on Wednesday night that God will make the tornado go kill somebody else? What do I do? Or do I find out how to protect myself and my family? Do I construct a shelter? Do I buy a weather radio? What do I do? Or do I just sit on my willfully ignorant ass and as these storms come through and kill and destroy, and then sit there and whine in front of a TV camera about how, well, I'd be dead except for Jesus. Jesus put his hand around me. God saved me. No, he didn't, you fool. It's just so devastating, though. It really is to see this, to see people. I'm sure it's not playing in the rest of the country the way it is down here on local newscasts, whether you're in Atlanta or Shreveport or Memphis or Nashville or Savannah, Richmond, wherever you are in the South and in these big metro areas. That's the news. That's what's on. And the videos that are playing and the first person interviews. I mean, television, when these events happen, are like goddamn vampires. They're like ghouls. They're like ghouls breaking into cemeteries and ripping open coffins and just pulling up handfuls of rotting flesh. It really is disgusting to see how media treats us. They will find people who are just shattered, broken, standing in front of what used to be their house or their trailer or wherever they lived. And it's just splintered rubble. And one of these bastards will show up and, jump out of his van with his microwave dish on the top of the van, and he's got on his disaster clothing, right? You know what I'm talking about. Got the gum boots on and the fatigue shirt and stuffs a microphone in somebody's face. Well, it looks like you've lost everything here. How does this make you feel? What are your plans? And I'm sitting at home. I just want to pull out a hammer and start just beating on the guy's goddamn van and his microwave transmitter. And just like, what are you doing? For the hour. This hour brought to you by Anthony Leopard or Lopert. Sorry, Anthony. Hope I got it right. Anthony writes his message: China has an economic plan and it is working. Wouldn't it be great if we did too? Yes, it would, Anthony. Email from Paul. Mike, it was a glorious day for Wills and Kate because the miserable flying monkey media was in a good mood and behaved themselves. They only had good gushing words to speak today instead of the usual poisonous mocking venom they spew on top of the outrageous, disgusting slanders and lies they peddle. Bravo to Wills and Kate. Two good-hearted souls managed to escape unscathed today. We can only hope their good fortune continues long into the future. Paul. Yeah, well, that was also part of my attitude to watch some of the faces that we see so often on network television providing exposure to Donald the Rooster Trump, or not talking about what has happened to Bradley Manning. Oh, well. Bottom of the, not this next hour, but the hour after that, I think we're going to do podcast trivia. Stick around for that. Nicole Sandler coming up here when we come back from the top of the hour break. News from down in the root cellar. From Prairie 2, he writes, Wall Street closed up again today despite generally bad economic news. But hey, the oil companies are doing really swell. Their sector had quarterly profits rise by 45% to $36 billion. That works out to $400 million per day in profits. Woo! Wall Street bankers and hedge funds, that's where the really wealthy go down to the well, they're taking their own separate cut off the top of gasoline, estimated by Reuters to be at least 50 cents a gallon. Uh-huh. Americans use 378 million gallons a day, so that's a cool $189 million every day in profit for the bankers with no real investment or contribution to society of any kind. Oil companies, for their part, do at least produce oil. Don't mind the occasional spillage disaster or that global warming thing. People are outraged that the oil companies are making so much money that even the orange Speaker of the House is pretending to be concerned. But Wall Street is taking $1.89 in profits for every $4 the oil companies are taking from you. And nobody mentions that on the news. And the Reuters estimate is probably low. Plus, the speculators are using the run-up in gas prices to boost the prices in other commodities as well, taking God knows how much profit there. This bubble will burst eventually and prices will fall. Don't worry about the Wall Street bankers. They make money on the way down, too. That also comes out of your pocket. Meanwhile, the economic damage is starting to have an effect as weekly unemployment claims were up again. The U.S. dollar set new post-crash record lows against other major currencies, and gold set a new record as more people continue trying to hedge. But gold could be a bubble, too, as the Fed plans to end the QE2 on schedule in June, and the printing presses will grind to a halt. Cries of hyperinflation aren't really supported by these price rises as the rest of the economy continues to sag. Stagnant or falling wages and 20 million jobless are simply too big of a drag on the economy to trigger any real lasting inflation. The extra you pay at the pump is just your lord and master collecting a tax to maintain his lifestyle. Should the Republicans accidentally get what they claim to want and slash spending, the economy would take a turn for the cliff in a matter of months. In the old days, out on the prairie, the root cellar in the backyard doubled as a tornado shelter. These days, you are increasingly more likely to need a tornado shelter thanks to the damage done to the atmosphere by big oil. And it had better be stocked with canned goods, thanks to the damage done to the economy by Wall Street bankers. PrairieNumeral2.com. You really think those oil prices are not being manipulated? Or the gasoline prices at the pump? I mean, it's probably good for all of us that less poison is being pumped into the air because fewer miles are being driven, fewer uses the internal combustion engine, which was the doomsday device planted in on Earth by somebody to make sure that eventually the human race would expire. Internal combustion engine, yeah. But the galling part is while high prices at the pump seems to be the only thing that gets our attention regarding that slow death. In the process, just like Prairie 2 points out, in the process, the rat bastards make a fortune. Of course, you can't spend it in hell, can you, boys? Huh? The day comes when you suckers suck in your last breath of air. All those billions, you think the Koch brothers, oh, they might live a little bit longer because they can go do what Dick Cheney did and buy all kinds of medical devices when their internal organs start to fail. But you know what, boys? Eventually, you're going to be dust in the wind just like the rest of us. I don't know. For some reason, I feel like they don't understand that. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Sponsored by Terrell. Terrell Hepworth, as a matter of fact, he has a message. Terrell writes, I'd like to dedicate Steely Dan's tune, King of the World, from their 1973 album, Countdown to Ecstasy, to our delusional king, the Donald. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. Thank you, Terrell. Thanks for the sponsorship. Nicole Sandler is like a lot of us in this business. Who come at the issues from a progressive or liberal perspective. Our careers are checkered. Our careers start and stop. They wind up over here, and then over here, and then down here, and then way up here, and then over here. We are used to it. Nicole Sandler joins us from Coral Springs. Hi, Nicole.
Hi, Mike.
Currently, Nicole, you can go to her website and get all the information that you want, NicoleSandler.com or RadioOrNot.com, either one.
Actually, that's the better one. The NicoleSandler.com is more of a resume, you know, for the job hunt.
I hear you. Yeah. Yeah, I have one up, too, constantly. RadioOrNot.com, and you can listen to Nicole's program online right now, anytime your little heart desires. All right, I want to know what I want to know what happened with this freak Alan West. I saw the video, and here's what I saw, Nicole. I saw you trying to engage West in some Q&A, and then I saw a strange-looking cop who decided to take you out of the room. And when he put his hands on you, I could hear you, hell, they could hear you in China saying, get your hands off me, which seems like a real rational thing to say. I mean, unless you're involved in...
Someone's manhandling you,
unless you're robbing a bank, you know, then mm-hmm. then it probably wouldn't be appropriate. But when you're at a with your member of Congress, as sad as that may be in reality, to see the cop do that, what happened?
I went to the town hall meeting because it was billed as a town hall meeting. If I had known it was going to be a PowerPoint presentation and a lecture, I would have passed.
Mm-hmm.
But a town hall meeting, I thought, is where you go and you get to engage with your congressman. Like a back and forth, a conversation. I've already heard what he has to say.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard those talking points. I wanted him to hear what I had to say. Because aren't our members of Congress supposed to be representing us?
I mean, that's the way it was originally set up. But anyway, of course they are. It still says that on paper. But,
right.
But when you make the effort to engage your member of Congress, it looks like you run the risk now of being arrested.
Yeah. You know, just think back to August of 2009 when all the right-wingers were being bussed into the town hall meetings with Democrats fighting against so-called Obamacare.
With their
right?
guns.
Keep your hands off my Medicare. With their guns.
With their guns.
With written instructions on how to disrupt these town hall meetings, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall any of them being kicked out, let alone being arrested.
You know, the sad part in Florida, I know you have a real mental facility escapee as your governor right now.
Yes, we do.
But the cop that decided to become a bully boy with you, if the government in Florida, including Alan West, if that government has its way, this guy will have everything ripped away from him, his retirement, his bargaining power, his union, and there he is arresting you.
Yeah.
He should have reached
up
and grabbed Alan West by the throat and just thrown him in jail on general principles.
You're absolutely right. But instead, as I was sitting in the back of the police car with my hands handcuffed behind me for over an hour until this so-called town hall meeting ended, I had to wait for the cop to go back inside because, you know, God forbid, some other dangerous constituent with a question needed to be arrested. So I had to wait till the thing was over so he could come back out and finish the paperwork. After the town hall meeting, the congressman actually came out. His car happened to be parked right behind the police car I was locked up in.
Mm-hmm.
And he's standing right outside the car, just to my right, right outside the window, yucking it up with the police officers and posing for pictures with them.
Oh my God! Oh my God!
Yeah.
Did you beat on the window of the cop car with your head or something because you were cuffed?
I absolutely did, and my window was rolled up, but the front window was down,
uh-huh.
and there was enough, and so I'm shouting out the window, "Congressman, I want to ask you a question." Congressman, he knew I was in the car.
You just don't.
He knew.
You don't learn, do you?
No, I don't.
I want to ask you a question. They're taking me to jail, but I want to ask you a question. God damn it!
Yeah, well,
I love
and he knew I was in the car, and he just gave this, you know, sort of snide smile after he was done posing for pictures with all these police officers.
Oh my God!
I walked to his car and drove away. So what happened? I went there, and as when I showed up, I was told, "Oh, if you have a question for the congressman, you need to write it on this card."
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, "Really? And we'll ask the questions." And it's like, you got to be kidding me. So I went in. By the way, it was held at one of those mega churches.
Oh no,
a place called Calvary Chapel, which, by the way, was not even in the district.
Oh my God.
It was in Fort Lauderdale, so out of the district. By the way, Congressman West doesn't live in the district. Things are crazy here in Florida. So So it's at this church, and after, you know, a few, the color guard and whatever, some guy walks out on the stage to thunderous applause, and my boyfriend David and I look at each other and go, "Who's that?"
Mm-hmm.
And one of the cult members there said, "Oh, that's Pastor Bob." Pastor Bob. And Pastor Bob proceeded to give a full-throated endorsement of Congressman West and tell how he met him before the election and he was so impressed with him.
But, Nicole, that's illegal.
I know it is. And this so-called church has tax-exempt status, and I think just because after listening to this 10-minute endorsement of this guy and how he endorsed him during the campaign, I think they need to lose that tax-exempt status.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. that would be poetic justice. Of course, it might make the God being pissed off at somebody, and they'll throw more tornadoes in the South. I don't know.
Oh, God.
All right. Now, what happened when you? Who told you to fill out the card?
Just the people when you walked in there. There were tables, and if you want to ask a question, and of course, I filled out a card, and I asked him something like, exactly how does in quotes, Planned Parenthood women neutering men increase the debt and deficit. I'm sure you heard that quote that he made the other day. He did say that. But what I really wanted to ask him about was Medicare and why, you know, they want to destroy Medicare. And so when they finally got to a Medicare question that, of course, one of the staffers read off a card. Mm-hmm. He started to give his talking points. You know, we're going to preserve Medicare for future generations.
Yeah, and
let the free market control it. And, right. And so he was finished with his talking points answer, and they were about to go on to, I guess, another question. And so I was raising my hand. I was in the second row, directly in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm raising my hand, knowing that and people are yelling at me, "Put your hand down. That's not how it works." and so when it was obvious he wasn't going to call on me, just said, "But it's not." He said, "You know, we're going to preserve Medicare. It's not preserving Medicare. It's privatizing it. And how does attaching a profit motive to Medicare make it more efficient?"
Mm-hmm.
And people started yelling at me. I said, "Wait a minute! It's a town hall meeting. That means it's supposed to be back and forth."
Okay, stop right there. That's a good stopping point while we do some commercials, just so keep everybody, including me, on pins and needles, because I want to know what happened next. All right, stay right there, Nicole, while we do some commercials. We're talking with Nicole Sandler. Go to radioornot.com and get all the information you want about Nicole's program. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Nicole Sandler, talk show host, and somebody who just can't be quiet when she's told to. Oh, my God. All right, so you're in the pew. And by the way, I guess this is kind of medieval, but I always thought that you couldn't be arrested in a church unless, you know, you were beating up the priest or something. But apparently that sanctuary idea doesn't hold anymore. They just bring the cops in and grab the people who are trying to participate in democracy. Oh, well.
But, you know, apparently you can, as long as the church gives the police permission to arrest people. Because it is private property.
Yeah, it certainly is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're standing there trying to get this guy's attention.
Right.
Or sitting.
And waving
there.
My hand. Right. And so, you know, I shout out, how is privatizing Social Security, you know, you're privatizing it, how is adding a profit motive make it more
viable.
Right. Efficient.
Right.
And then I said, you know, and people start yelling at me, and I said, it's a town hall meeting. That means back and forth, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then here was the question I really wanted to ask. And this is, I'm shouting to shout over. You see, the microphone is very far away from me. And this is how they make people who just want to ask a question out to be, you know, insane, crazy people shouting out because mm-hmm. I don't have a microphone. I've got to shout to make my voice heard.
Right.
So, but this is the question I really wanted to ask. Give me the name of the insurance company and a phone number, please, who will write a policy, sell a policy to a 75-year-old with obesity, high blood pressure, and diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't exist, and I don't care if the voucher is for $8,000, $15,000, or a blank check.
Right, right.
No company is going to sell that person an insurance policy. And but before, as I was trying to say that, first the brown shirt private security guy for the church said, "That's it. You got to leave." It's like, all right. And then this Fort Lauderdale police officer comes up behind him and says, "Let's go. You're leaving." And I said, "Okay." And I gathered my stuff and I'm moving out. You know, of course, the woman behind me says, "You're as ugly on the inside as you are on the outside."
Oh my God. You know? Oh my God.
Lovely things like that. To which I shouldn't have responded, but you know, I did because I can't keep my mouth shut. So anyway, we're walking out. And I've got my little flip camera with me, and this cop kept pushing me and shoving me, and you know he was just so rude that I turned around and I turned the camera on him, mm-hmm. and I said, "I want your name and your badge number." He said, "Do whatever you need to do, but you have to leave." I said, "Good, I'm going." And meanwhile, following us were a group of people, including a reporter for the Sun Sentinel and a cameraman from the CBS-owned station down here, mm-hmm. who filmed the entire thing, and others, some right-winger with a video camera, and other people were walking with us, and they were asking me questions. So I'm talking to them as we're walking out. Well, apparently I wasn't walking quickly enough for this police officer,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, he kept yelling at me, like, "Go, you got to go." And I said, I'm going. Then he was manhandling me, he was pushing me, and I think you saw this part.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I said, "Get your hands off of me." And I'm trying to remember the exact sequence, but, then he pushed me again and he put his finger in my face and he said, "You need to leave." And when I turned around, I put my finger in his face. I said, "Get your hands off of me." And he said, "You're under arrest."
Mm-hmm.
That's it. And he put my hands behind my back and slapped the cuffs on me and, you know, marched me out to the car.
You know, and the real fascist part of this, I watched that video, and at no time were you doing anything except following his orders. And I, you know, when he decided to arrest you and put those horrific plastic cuffs on, and I know about those plastic cuffs, they do.
They weren't plastic, they were metal. And
you had the metal ones on?
The metal cuffs, and
oh,
my wrists
God.
Are bruised.
Yeah.
To and cut.
Right.
I mean, he slapped them on tight, and I was bleeding, and I've got bruises on both wrists.
All right. So when the cop car finally left the church.
Uh-huh.
With you in the back seat, what happened next? All right, no, wait. We're going to have to do it. We're going to have to do another break
again.
Yeah,
okay.
Because you know, I don't know how long you were in the slam, and I think a lot of people want to know. Just I've seen all kinds of things from you were there, you were released, you were there, you were uh-huh. held, you were there, you were put in a closet, you were there,
uh-huh.
and they waterboarded you, you were there,
and they maced me.
They did mace you. Okay,
they did mace me.
Oh my God! I can't believe that mace. Jesus,
yep.
God.
I got mace in jail.
Mace in jail. Oh,
in
okay.
jail.
Yeah, well, that.
It had not, the mace thing had nothing to do with Alan West. Again, it's because I can't keep my mouth shut.
Well,
but
because,
you know what?
You're an uppity woman.
I am. And I also, I was under the impression or the belief that you're presumed innocent until proven guilty.
Oh, no. I don't know where you got that. Hey, hold on, Nicole. Hold on. I know about uppity women, too. I'm married to one. All right, we'll be back. Stay with us. We're going to finish the story with Nicole Sandler. Go to her website, radioornot.com. We'll be right back. before the hour, we're talking about Nicole Sanders' wonderful, exciting encounter with system of representative government and law enforcement to make sure, by God, it works. You know the story, what happened to Nicole, and that's what we're talking about. Before we get back into it, let me just mention this hour is sponsored by Terrell Hepworth. He writes, I'd like to dedicate Steely Dan's tune King of the World off the 1973 album Countdown to Ecstasy to our delusional king, the Donald. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. All right, so you're in the cop car. They take you to the station or the precinct or whatever. What happened next?
Yeah, well, first they take me to the Fort Lauderdale Police Department jail where I'm sitting for, fingerprinted and everything, sitting for a couple hours. Then they transport me to the Broward County Jail, where it takes another few hours to get booked. They slapped the handcuffs on me around 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
I finally got booked into the Broward County Jail at 2 a.m., at which time they tell me my bond is $25. Big, heavy duty crime there.
$25. They're doing all this. Oh my God, this doesn't even pay the cops overtime.
Right. So the bond is $25, and tell me I can now make a phone call. So I call my boyfriend David, so what I said to the woman who booked me, I said, so, excuse me, I've never been through this before, so please, walk me through it. I can make a phone call, he'll come down and pay the bond, and then I can leave. And she said, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I call David. 2 o'clock in the morning, he drives the half hour to go post bond. So about an hour later, I'm brought upstairs, and I think, okay, great, I'm going home. David should have been here, mm-hmm. waiting for me. And we get off the elevator at the second floor, and she says, take a blanket. I'm like, what do you mean a blanket? I'm going home.
Oh,
Jesus. And she laughed. She goes, no, I said my boyfriend came to post bond. I'm supposed to leave. And she said, oh, it takes 6 to 8 hours after you post bond to get, to get released.
Oh, my God.
So at that point, I realized I'm spending the night here.
Mm-hmm.
So I get this blanket that looks like a giant ShamWow, but is really itchy. And they say, okay, go into number 6. And it's a cell that had, it must have been maybe 7 feet by 10, maybe 12 feet, being generous. And there's a cot against the wall with a inch thick mattress on it and a woman sitting there and two of the mattresses on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And it was myself and this other woman and we're thrown in there. So there were three of us in the cell. I get the one next to the toilet, the steel toilet that looks like it has never been cleaned.
Right. Well, it hasn't.
No, right. So by now it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. Of course I don't sleep. First of all, look where I am. And, I know people joke about it, but there's something called restless leg syndrome and I actually have it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't lie. I have medication, but of course I didn't have my medication. And so I can't lie still at night. I'm pacing around like this tiny little area that's empty. And then at 4 o'clock in the morning, they call everyone out for breakfast. So they wake all these women up to serve them breakfast at 4 o'clock in the morning, which I thought was interesting. And then we go back in, we're locked up at about 7:30, they let us out again into the outside area they called the day room. And all but four of us were then taken off to see the magistrate to get, right. I guess, bond set or whatever. And the four of us that are left there are put in this one cell. We're told for just a few minutes while they clean.
Uh-huh.
But it's a cell, the same size cell, that is being used to store dozens of these mattresses.
Mm-hmm.
So there's four of us in this tiny cell with mattresses piled, floor to ceiling, and nowhere to move and no air circulation, right?
Oh, my God.
But all this time goes by, and I'm going, what the hell is going on here? And then I hear voices, and the women are starting to come back from the magistrate. They're out there watching TV, and we can't get out. Well, after about an hour, the door finally opens,
mm-hmm.
and the guard walks into the day room, and I said to him, what happened? Did you forget about us? And he said, yeah, it happened. And I said, really? I think you owe us an apology.
Uh-oh.
And he goes, and he like laughs. He goes, oh yeah, I'm so sorry. And I said, seriously, we're human beings. You stick us in this storage room with the mattresses, there's no air circulation, and you forget about us. You really owe us an apology. And he says, I got your apology. You see that cell up there, number one? Get up there. Get in there. You got all the air you want by yourself. And he put me in solitary confinement
for
3 hours. And so then finally he comes back into the open area. I mean, I can hear. I can see him. There's a little window through the locked door. And he comes back in. He said, all right, it's lunchtime. And I said, can I please come out now? And he says, no. I said, please, I'm really, really sorry. And he said, no. So I said, okay, well, do I get lunch? And he said, yeah. So he comes up after he hands out everybody else's lunch, and the door opens, enough for him to hand me the little tray through the thing, and then it slams shut again and locks. And about a minute and a half later, the door opened. And I thought, well, maybe the guy has a heart after all.
Mm-hmm.
And I step out. And I didn't even go downstairs. I was relieved to be out of there. And I sit on the step, the top step, right outside the cell.
Mm-hmm.
And then he notices me. He says, get back in there. And I said, please don't make me go back in there. And he said, I'm telling you to get back in there. Are you disobeying my order?
Oh, my God.
And I said, well, yeah, please let me stay. And as I'm saying, please let me stay out here, he starts spraying mace in my eyes, in my mouth, in my hair.
Oh my God.
It was like two big sprays of mace, and I guess I crawled back into the cell, and by that time I'm screaming. I mean, if you think you heard me screaming to the cop to get his hands off of me, I promise you that was nothing compared to the screams when my eyes started burning and my face and my scalp and my skin was burning. The most unbelievable thing I've ever been through.
Mm-hmm. You know, this, as you're telling this, of course I'm kind of giggling because of the dark humor. At one minute, I'm thinking about, this sounds like a Marx Brothers movie. On the other hand, it reminds me of Cool Hand Luke. You know, no matter what he did, they just turned the screw on him tighter. I cannot believe they maced you. They put you in solitary. What in the hell did you do?
I went to a town hall meeting
right.
and asked my congressman a question.
Oh, my God! I mean, you know, I've lived in Florida three times over the course of my life, Nicole, and every time I've left, you know, I'm usually running, looking over my shoulder, you know, as I cross the Georgia state line. But this is insane. I mean, this is insane the police whose jobs are going to end, whose retirements are going to be slashed, whose health insurance is going to disappear. All of this because of what's your guy's name? Rick. What's the governor's name? Rick Scott. Who he's the one who should have been maced and put in jail. That son of a bitch. How many people did he rip off with his company down there? Oh my God.
It's Medicare fraud.
It's just
billions of dollars.
I don't know, Nicole.
Medicare fraud. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
If I didn't experience it, I wouldn't believe it because it sounds so insane. But the beautiful thing is, there's a video of the arrest. I mean, you saw it, Mike.
Right.
And the arresting officer falsified the arrest report. He wrote that I became physically aggressive with him and I pushed him numerous times.
Oh my God.
Touched him.
Well, are you going to sue?
I don't know. Right now, I just want my record cleared. I have a criminal charge against me. Trespass after warning.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to get that cleared. Because,
go ahead, go ahead.
I could probably get rid of it by paying a $50 fine or something, but I won't do that.
Maybe Florida has a first offender law or something, and I'm not being cute there. I mean, I'm seriously. Maybe they have some kind of a legal process where it'll be expunged from your record. This is madness. I mean, I've had my own experiences in these kinds of situations. Trust me, but this is ridiculous. I mean, I've been busted on White House property and never went through this kind of insanity. So it's just I don't know. Apparently, the cop who started all this with you, he must have been an Alan West voter. The fact that this occurred in a church, which makes the whole thing kind of doubly obscene, in a church with somebody who was elected, I guess, to represent a district that he's not even talking in, and you're the one that winds up in jail. This is madness. Yeah. All right, listen, we're almost out of time, but can you hold one more spot set, and we'll come back and wind it up.
Sure.
All right, Nicole? All right.
No problem.
All right.
Yep.
We're talking with Nicole Sandler, obviously. Go to her website, radioornot.com. And if you want to go someplace and just find out about Nicole, go to NicoleSandler.com. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Here comes the helicopter.
It's about 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Terrell Hepworth. This message I'd like to dedicate Steely Dan's tune, King of the World, off the 73 album Countdown to Ecstasy, to our delusional king, the Donald. Thanks, Mike and Kathy. We're talking with Nicole Sandler about her exciting adventure with the two different police departments. In the few minutes we have left here, Nicole, how did you eventually get out of the clutches of the law, you criminal, you?
Well, after after I demanded they take me to a doctor, they took me to the nurse to wash the stuff out of my eyes, which they did by holding my face under the running faucet. You know, they don't even have eye wash at a place where they use mm-hmm. pepper spray. Mm-hmm. Lovely. Then I was brought back in, allowed to shower to get the stuff off of me. Mm-hmm. And some guy came in and said, "Have you calmed down now? We're trying to get you out of here."
Oh,
like,
God,
yeah,
God.
My boyfriend posted bond 12 hours ago. If you wanted me out of here, you would have let me go. And they finally let me go.
Mm-hmm. That was it.
Yeah.
Do you have a court date?
No, not yet.
And the bond that you posted, is this one of those deals where if you forfeit the bond, the case is dismissed, or does that mean that you would be pleading guilty?
Oh, I don't even know, but yeah, no, probably. I don't know, but no, I'm not pleading guilty because I did nothing wrong. But boy, someone just sent me the Broward Sheriff's Office report of the macing incident,
mm-hmm.
and the guy who maced me just totally fabricated everything. It's a complete lie. It was emailed to me during the break. I just now read it, and I'm in shock. Actually, I'm not in shock. The police report of the arrest mm-hmm. was a lie, and this is a lie. I'm blown away.
Isn't it amazing when we stop and think about this kind of stuff, Nicole, that lying to put people in jail, especially if you happen to be a person of color or you happen to be poor, lying to put people in jail, sometimes long prison sentences, is just a standard operating procedure.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't understand how that works. And here you've had an experience. You know it was a lie. There is video evidence that it's a lie. Whatever occurred in the jail that was not being videotaped from your firsthand experience is a lie. But how many people are in county jails or state prisons because there was a conspiracy of lies that put them there? It's just it's a horrific situation. Are you going to go to Alan West's next town hall meeting?
You know, the funny thing is there was another one the following night. Mine was Tuesday night. I got out Wednesday afternoon.
Right.
And there was one Wednesday night in Boca. And if I had slept at all the night before, I thought about it. But my boyfriend went. And it was interesting. They were a lot nicer, and they changed the procedure slightly that night, although nobody got arrested, but they were not quite as militant in Boca as they were in Fort Lauderdale. And that just might be, a function of the Fort Lauderdale Police Department being very brutal.
And what is interesting, if you look at some of the videos that are making it even into network news, Paul Ryan, some of these other members of Congress are getting the kind of raucous town hall meetings and questions from the people who voted them in. And yet you don't see some of these folks being hauled away. Of course, most of the stuff is being done outside of the crazy South, where you and I both live, but I'd like to see it continue. I'd like to see people continue to harass these bastards when they have these phony town hall meetings, and just keep the pressure on. What else can a constituent do?
Well, that's it, because obviously, we don't have the right to be heard by our congressmen, it seems, but we do have a right to show up and speak our. That is our First Amendment right to speak out. So, David, my boyfriend got thrown out in Boca,
but he didn't
get arrested.
He was told to leave?
Oh, yeah. He was ordered to leave,
which
he did. Yeah.
All right. Well, yeah. Nicole, I'm sure you're. It's been one hell of an experience, and from what I understand, even though you and I had never met, I think Randy told me one time you're pretty tough broad. So,
and I'm a huge fan of yours, Mike. And so,
thank you.
I love what you do, and hopefully we'll meet one of these days. And,
yeah.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Definitely happen. I just hope it's not in a jail cell. All right.
No.
All right, Nicole.
Not.
Thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. Take care, okay?
Thank you, Mike.
All right, bye-bye. Nicole Sandler, go to our website, radioornot.com or nicolesandler.com, and check out what Nicole's all about. Her program right now, I believe there are plans to take it not just on the Internet, but it's on the Internet now, and you can get that information at radioornot.com. How do you get maced in jail because you are sitting on the floor? Make light of what happened to Nicole. We can giggle and hoot and holler and throw things at the screen about her experience, just like I can do the same about mine. I think anybody who gets arrested for protesting or demonstrating, or we just had an instance here at Emory University. 10 or 12 students were arrested because they set up a little tent city in protest of the way food service workers on the Emory University campus were being treated by their employer. And it wasn't workers that went on strike. It was Emory students who protested. And if you look at that video, you see the same kind of manhandling attitude that is getting worse and worse. And the terrible part of this is that the cops don't seem to realize who the enemy really is. And I wonder if they ever will. All right, we'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. back, 7 past the hour. A few minutes at the bottom of the hour, we'll do some podcast trivia here and give away a 1-year subscription to the Malloy Show podcast downloads, commercial free. Got an email from Franco Ripple. He's the Southeast Regional Director of Florida Young Democrats. And the first part of his email I'll share with you. He writes, I'm proud to be a truth seeker, writing while listening to your always excellent show. I like that. I like when emails start that way. It was good hearing Nicole as your guest tonight. I organized the anti-West protest at the meeting where she was arrested, and I'll be on her show next week. But I also want to ask you a question. Your listeners have likely heard all about the protests in Wisconsin, Ohio, Illinois, Indiana, and all across America, where reactionary politicians have stripped workers' rights and have led to legislative gridlock, sit-ins, and walkouts. But have you heard what's happening in Florida? The quick answer to that is not really, Franco. He goes on, major union-busting legislation, a record number of anti-abortion bills, legalized political bribery, intra-party fighting, both Republicans and Democrats. Perhaps no state in the nation has been on a wilder ride than Florida this spring. Well, it just so happens that, at Huffington Post, day before yesterday, an article here, a bill targeting public unions in Florida appears headed for failure despite a last-minute lobbying effort by the guy who should be in prison, but he's in the governor's office, Rick Scott. The legislation, it was SB 830, would prohibit state and local governments from automatically deducting union dues from employees' paychecks. And union members also would have had to have given written consent before their dues are used for political purposes. I mean, this is just goddamn madness. This is insanity. Do you understand the full-throated, full-scale attack that is being waged across the country by the right-wing neo-fascist Republicans against any kind of organized labor? It just so happens about 85% of the remaining organized labor are the public, so-called public unions, public employees. It's just vicious. But according to a report in the Miami Herald, this phony-ass governor made personal visits to the office of 4 Republican state senators and pleaded with them to support the measure. Last Wednesday, all 4 Republican state senators were unpersuaded. Charlie Dean, one of the senators who met with Scott, said, quote, I'm a conservative Republican. I support the governor and I support the president and the speaker, but I also the president of the Senate. But I also reserve the right somehow to make up my own mind. Quote. An aide to this Republican Florida senator said Senator Dean's main objections to this bill are that he doesn't believe it's his money to say. He doesn't believe it's his money to say. I'm not sure what the freak means by that sentence, but the freak goes on to say he should be left alone. What he would really like to see is if we're going to take away the option for the state to take money out of the checks, we should do it across the board, end quote. Another Republican senator, Miguel Diaz de la Portilla, said of the bill, quote, it creates division and turmoil and doesn't create jobs, end quote. State Senator Rene Garcia, Republican, confirmed that he met with Scott on Wednesday and reiterated that he would be opposing the bill. He said he had heard from many of his constituents who are union members and wondered why the legislature was targeting them rather than going after all automatic deductions. This state senator, another Republican, said, if we weren't a right-to-work state, I might have been more inclined to vote for it. But this is a right-to-work state, and people aren't forced to join a union. People can opt in and opt out of the union whenever they want. That's my main reason for voting against this bill. All right. Well, do you get kind of a feel for what's going on here? There is dissent even among these neo-fascist Republicans. Their constituents are telling them. Now, this is on a state level. If it were on the federal level, these senators would be bought and paid for by their corporate masters. In some states, that's true right now. Apparently, it hasn't quite happened yet in Florida on the state level. But there is dissension in the ranks because some of the people who voted for these Republicans, in other words, Republican voters, are getting a little queasy about this because they happen to be members of unions, public employee unions. Of course, what the people who voted for these Republicans don't understand is that they, and I don't know what could be more clear, when they vote these people, vote for these Republicans, they're voting against their own economic best interest. Now, these Republican senators may be resisting, but eventually they will collapse. This happens all the time. This bill, I believe, now has been defeated, but it will just surface again during the next session or the one after that. The insanity of doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, that is what I don't get it about these people. I don't get it about Republican voters. First of all, I don't know why anyone in this country would ever vote Republican. If it's about a gay issue, or if it's about a tax issue, if it's about an immigration issue or a gun issue, why not address that on an individual basis? Put a Democrat in who will listen to you. If you happen to be a gay voter and you want to be included in a hate crimes bill, then vote for a Democrat. The Republican's not going to listen to you because his ass is owned by some church somewhere. See, that's the deal on the state level. The religious right owns so many of these freaks. On a national level, corporate America owns them. But there's not a Republican out there in any legislature, state or federal, who is not owned by somebody. These are not independent members of legislatures. They are not their own people. They are owned by somebody. They are doing the bidding of somebody. Now, to see these Republicans resist this anti-union bill is kind of a smokescreen. I think the real problem is the Republicans in Florida are starting to realize who Rick Scott is, the governor. About 2 weeks ago, Associated Press, well, it was in the Herald Times in Florida. Rick Scott is being booed. He was booed at a ballpark, protested at a parade, mocked on $8 bills. He's growing increasingly unpopular, according to the latest Quinnipiac University survey of 1,500 registered Florida voters. The poll found that 48% disapprove of how he's doing, more than double what it was in February. Only 35% gave the Republican governor a favorable rating. The reasons for Scott's problems are varied. An economy on life support in a state where 60% of voters say they're dissatisfied. Power scuffles with lawmakers from his own party. Newly energized left in Florida that deeply dislikes him. And a hard right governing style on his part that seems to estrange Democrats as well as middle of the road independent voters who swing elections. They don't like this guy by a wide margin. So, you know, why don't the voters of Florida get together and recall him? He belongs in jail. He is corrupt down to the bottoms of the soles of his feet. And I don't understand why the voters in Florida, disorganized lot that they are, don't remove this freak from office.
Afraid that God will take his toll, that we forget to begin. But who will save your soul when it comes to the best?
practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Right after this next break coming up, we're going to do podcast trivia. So if you would like to win a free one-year subscription to Malloy Program podcast downloads, commercial-free and ready to rock and roll, sent to your email every day, now's the time to call in. We'll put you on hold and do that in the next few minutes. Fair.org, if you don't go to their website, shame on you. You should go there all the time. Fairness and accuracy in reporting. Set up several years ago. Was it Jeff Cohen was one of the founders of Fair? I think. A couple of items from Fair.org's website today. They're trying to figure out what mystical power forces the corporate media to cover Donald Trump. In the New York Times, was it today or yesterday, this quote, "But White House officials concluded about a month ago that the falsehoods had moved from the nether regions of the Internet into the mainstream political arena, thanks in large part to the efforts of Mr. Trump, the real estate developer and reality television host who has used the issue as a media magnet," end quote. Why would the New York Times publish something like that? Dan Balls of the Washington Post elaborated. He was on the PBS NewsHour, and he said, quote, "I mean, I think that the press probably does bear some responsibility for this, but there's no question that what Donald Trump has done over the last month in bringing this issue back to the forefront at a time when I think most people thought it had been pretty well settled politically, not that there wasn't still some controversy, but that for the most part, this wasn't a live issue. But Donald Trump helped to make it a live issue. And all the press coverage attendant to that, some of it aimed at debunking what Trump was saying, nonetheless contributed to this atmosphere," end quote. And as Fair.org says, issues are not brought to the forefront and made a live issue by some series of accidents or the physical properties of magnets. Media outlets make decisions about what to cover. In Dan Balz's world, Trump started talking and the press simply had to cover it. Trump didn't make anything a live issue. People who had television stations and newspapers decided to treat him as if he's a serious person. I never realized how much Donald Trump turns my stomach, and the reason for it is I never paid any attention to him. He lives in a universe populated by just bizarre people who cut each other's throats and lie to each other and steal money and build things. Oh, yeah, they build things. But he lives in this strange world that I could not and would not enter no matter what. I'm no more interested than being around swine like that than I'm interested in being around, you know, great big glops of dog droppings. Trump is just like a nothing on my personal radar screen. But all of a sudden, media start paying attention to him as if he had something worthwhile to say, not even important, but worthwhile. Trump is a freak. He defines this maniacal, egocentric attitude. You know, when he got off that helicopter the other day and said, "I'm very proud of myself," you know, the day that Obama decided to release his long-form birth certificate, I just about lost it. Like, are you kidding me? Are you this just totally insane? But I don't, I'm doing it tonight, but normally I don't talk about this guy except to mock him and call him a dumb bastard and point out what you already know. I mean, you don't need someone like me telling you what a freak this guy is. The crazy people in cyberspace, you know, the right wingers, the bug jumpers, you know, the neo-Nazi types. Trump is their new hero because he goes after, so to speak, the president of the United States. And these racist sons of bitches on these crazy right-wing websites, these mouth breathers, the knuckle draggers, the booger eaters, you know, they just love him. They think, oh, yeah, Trump, go ahead. as if Trump even knows they exist and couldn't care less. Are you kidding me? You poor miserable bastards. You right-wing cretins that I don't know. I just get so freaked out by right-wingers because of your gross, your monumental, your volcanic stupidity. You people just crack me up. You jerks. Oh, let me get out of this by taking a break. Play some music, will you, Kathy? I'll just... We'll be back, podcast trivia, when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Americans ran and cried like a bunch of little babies, wah, 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 in the war of 1812.
Now, hillbilly from Kentucky, dressed in green and red, left home to fight in Canada, but they returned home dead. It's the only war the Yankees lost, except for Vietnam, and also the Alamo,
right,
and the Bay of Ham. The loser was America, the winner was ourselves.
So join right.
It's time once again for podcast trivia here on the Malloy program, where you can win a 1-year subscription to Malloy podcast downloads, absolutely free, commercial free. A retail value of $59.60 works out to 25 cents a program, hence the 2-bit radio show. Anyway, all you have to do is get the right answer. Now, my producers told me that the questions I've been asking lately were a little bit weak, so she's tightened up on them just a bit. So let's see what happens. Jill is in Reston, Virginia. Hey, Jill.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. You ready to give this a try?
Sure.
All right. All you have to do is come up with the right answer here, and you get a 1-year subscription to our program, podcast downloads. Let's get the music going here, Madam Producer, that makes all our contestants very nervous. Ah, there it is. All right, Jill, here we go. Here's the question. Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan had to get a police escort to safely exit his Tuesday town hall meeting this week when angry protesters surrounded his car. What were they angry about? Was it A, Ryan's continued demands to personally inspect the long form of Obama's birth certificate, B, his budget proposal to replace Medicare with a voucher system while maintaining tax cuts for the very wealthy, C, his plan to end collective bargaining for all federal employees? Which is it, A, B, or C?
I didn't hear the story of his car being surrounded, but I do know people are angry about B, the budget and tax.
That's right. Absolutely right. All right. Way to go. Jill in Reston, Virginia. You win.
Thank you, Mike.
All right. Stay on the phone, and Kathy will get the pertinent information here so that you can receive this every day in your email. Now, so many of the podcast subscriptions we've been giving away lately come from Sean. He donated 12 of them. And he also had a note with his podcast donations, and I'm going to read it for you one more time. He said, I'm donating 12 Malloy podcasts with a call to all engineers and scientists to join me in boycotting corporations. Engineers, scientists, and all experts in the technical trades, please join me in boycotting your hard work and intellectual efforts to big corporations who are destroying this country. Pledge to stop giving your good ideas and solutions to these corporations and focus on those organizations that work to better our lives instead of destroying them. I need your help to make this work. Thank you, Sean. I hope that campaign is working out, Sean, but we do appreciate the 12 podcast subscriptions that he donated to the program. This is a little difficult to deal with. The Obama White House threatens to blacklist a paper for covering the protest. San Francisco Chronicle apparently is in trouble for posting a video of a protest against the White House treatment of suspected WikiLeaks source Bradley Manning. And a reporter for the Chronicle reports that the Obama White House threatened Thursday to exclude the Chronicle from pooled coverage of its events in the Bay Area after the paper posted a video of a protest at a San Francisco fundraiser for President Obama last week. We told you about this and posted the video, as a matter of fact. Chronicle editor Ward Busby made these comments. Anyway, White House guidelines governing press coverage of such events are too restrictive, the editor said, and the newspaper was within its rights to film the protest and post the video. Now, Chronicle reporter Carla Marinucci was the designated pool reporter at an Obama fundraiser, meaning that her write-up would be shared with other reporters who were not allowed into the event. But something truly newsworthy happened, and she reported it. Remember this? At the St. Regis event, a group of protesters who paid collectively $76,000 to attend the fundraiser interrupted Obama with a song complaining about the Obama administration's treatment of PFC Bradley Manning. As part of a print-only pool, Carla Marinucci was limited by White House guidelines to provide a print-only report. But Marinucci also took a video of the protest, which she posted in her written story in the online edition of the Chronicle at sfgate.com and on its politics blog after she sent her written pool report. Now, the Chronicle story closes with this ironic point about the White House's view of technology and information sharing. Quote, at Facebook, the day before the San Francisco fundraiser, Obama said, the main reason we wanted to do this is, first of all, because more and more people, especially young people, are getting their information through different media. And obviously, what all of you have built together is helping to revolutionize how people get information, how they process information, how they are connecting with each other, end quote. Apparently, Carla Marinucci posting a video was a little too much revolutionizing. Jesus, God. They can't be serious. The White House can't be serious that the San Francisco Chronicle is going to get some kind of disciplinary action because the reporter posted a video. If you saw that, the people singing the song were respectful. Obama took it in what I thought was pretty good humor. It's not a humorous story about Bradley Manning, but Obama could have done a George Bush and called the police to come and have everybody arrested, which he didn't. And the people singing the song were respectful. Obama was respectful of them. And as you watch the video, you think, well, I'll be damned. Here's just a nice, I wonder if this sunk into Obama. I wonder if he gets it. I wonder if he realizes that the main thrust of that action was to get it out so people could see that these protesters are trying to make a point about Bradley Manning. And now this? Oh, come on. Come on. And it wasn't like they crashed the event. It was a paid event. They paid. It was a fundraiser. They raised funds. So what's the complaint? Mr. President, just getting under your skin, too much of that birther crap. Ignore the birthers and free Bradley Manning. I mean, what's so hard about that? Why in the world you would produce your birth certificate at this point, especially when Donald the Rooster Trump now walks around the United States or flies around, jets around crowing that you're afraid of him, and that's the reason. Oh, Jesus. But you did release it. Okay. So how about releasing something else? And you can do that just as easily, since you are the commander-in-chief. How about releasing Bradley Manning? If you insist that Bradley Manning has to go through the criminal justice system or the military criminal justice system. If you insist on that, okay, how about, since the situation is so weird, how about letting him post bond? Where's he going to run to, Mr. Obama? This is a PFC. This is a second lowest rank in the Army. What's he going to do? Hop on his corporate jet and take off? He has been tortured, Mr. President, for the past 8 months. Whether or not he can assist in mounting a defense against the charges against him remains to be seen. But Mr. Obama, for heaven's sake, what is your objective here? What are you trying to do? What are you trying to demonstrate to the American public? What, that you uphold the rule of law? What's the rule of law? If you upheld the rule of law in this case, wouldn't you have ended his solitary confinement and his torture some time ago? And as far as the rule of law is concerned, when the United States State Department and the U.S. military, as revealed in these WikiLeaks documents, commit acts that can only be considered crimes, where's your rule of law? Oh, I know you've got to walk softly. You've got to be very careful, right, Mr. President? It's hard enough being in the historic position that you're in and dealing with all the insane white people in this country, the really dribbling, drooling, slobbering, insane white people in this country. So I guess you're between a rock and a hard place. But you know what, Mr. President? A lot of leaders have been between a rock and a hard place, and a few of them have actually done the right thing. A few of them have actually transcended politics or transcended their own dance and committed themselves to the rule of law and justice. A lot of people that voted for you, Mr. President, thought they were doing just that when they voted for you.
Get up, stand up, boom. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, boom. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, boom. Stand up for your right.
From Sailbad, Norway. How do you pronounce that?
Well, actually, the Norwegians call it Svalbard, but I think it's better known as Spitsbergen in the English-speaking world.
Spitsbergen. All right, what are you doing in Norway?
Well, we've got a charter up here.
Yeah.
We brought in all kinds of general stuff, and we're supposed to bring out some frozen fish, and I can well believe it's frozen. I've stayed awake all night waiting for the sun to go down. And it hasn't gone down yet, so I've given up on it. And I'm freezing my bollocks off. I wanted to go for it. We got in here the day before yesterday. I wanted to go for a walk, and they said, you've got to have a rifle with you. I said, why do I need a rifle? They said, because of the polar bears. And actually, you're supposed to get a permit to go walking, and you've got to have a rifle. But you're not supposed to shoot the bloody things unless they're ready to tear your head off, so you've got to frighten them away.
Do you feel a bit out of your element, Blue?
I'm a bit out of my element, yeah. There's no red wine up here either.
Oh, well, there you go. I bet there's good beer, though, right?
Well, I haven't tried the beer yet, but look, I've been doing this for about 25 years now.
Yeah.
And flying all over the place, and I can tell you that I've never seen such a level of rage and resentment, fear and loathing and hatred and contempt to the United States and its leaders and its people. I mean, it's truly amazing.
Even for Barack Obama?
For Barack Obama, of course. And the thing that's infuriating, I think, to a lot of people in the rest of the world is that so many Americans are still willing to make excuses for this guy. They still don't understand that he's the Ted Bundy of American politics. He's charming. He's intelligent. You know, he's good-looking. He's articulate. But he's a sociopathic murderer. I'm serious about this.
Well, I realize he's ordering people to be blown into chunks of meat and bone. I understand, sure.
So I think what people don't understand in the rest of the world is two things. One, why are people in the United States so willing to continue to make excuses for this bastard? And why don't they do anything? You know, they don't protest. They don't demonstrate. I mean, apart from you and a few of your friends who were in Washington a month or so ago, they don't boycott. They don't strike. You know, in Wisconsin, they said, oh, you've been so mean to us, we're going to strike. And then the governor says, well, we're going to be even more mean to you if you do strike. So they say, okay, we won't strike. I mean, this is ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. And, of course, as I've said before, a lot of people are paying much more. Are you still there?
Oh, sure.
A lot of people are paying much more attention to what's going on in your country who live outside your country, I think, than your own population.
Well, that's very true. Yes, I don't think you'll get, you certainly won't get any argument from me about that. It's a shame that there isn't more focus. How about coming here and leading a demonstration? What could possibly happen? I guess you could be deported.
Well, I've already taken part in one.
Right.
And it was very promising. You know, the night, I think I called you the day after we were there.
You did.
In Madison.
Right.
And there was a wonderful spirit. But as I said later on, I think I called you back and I said, look, what have they done? They gave up the state capitol when they had this bastard Walker by the short and curlies. They gave up. They walked out of the capitol. And now the people of Wisconsin have said, we're not going to strike, or the unions have said, we're not going to strike, which is the one thing that would shut down the state of Wisconsin, that would put this bastard in his place.
Well, not completely. There's a difference in this country. I know this is not true in France. It's probably not true in most of Europe or the UK. But here's the way it works in this country. If these workers were to go out on strike, then the governor of Wisconsin has the legal right to fire them all and hire people who are non-union and put them in their place. Now, that may sound kind of simplistic and weird to somebody who's not from the States. But a lot of these folks just simply do not want to use that avenue to make their point. They're using the recall process. They are filing petitions with names to get these bastards out of office rather than just go out on a general strike and lose their jobs. That would leave the people causing the problem still in power.
I think what you're saying in a polite way is they don't want to take any risks at all. They don't want to take a single bloody risk.
No, that's not what I'm saying. They've already taken the risk. There was plenty of obvious publicity. I think it was made clear to people to whom this needs to be made clear that there are people left in this country who are not going to put up with this. But rather than do something as impotent, and it would be impotent, Blue, you gotta agree with me here because I live here. It would be totally impotent for union public workers in Wisconsin to stage a strike unless
they've had the same kind of threats in other parts of the world, and they've gone ahead and struck, and they've got their way because they shut the place down.
Right, and there's a reason for it, because in other parts of the world, when a strike is called, people respect the strikers. They don't do that here. Most of the rest of the world is unionized. I don't know how it is in Australia, but I will guarantee you that the workers in the UK and Europe are organized. There are very strong unions. And when, using France as an example again, when the French go out on strike, the people may bitch and complain and grumble about the inconvenience of it all, but they respect the strike. That wouldn't happen in this country. So the unionized workers here, the public service workers, understand what they're up against. So what they're using is the legal process or the legal system to try to, or the political system to try to get these bastards removed from office. And
so they rigged the election for the Supreme Court so that the person who actually won the election is not going to sit on the court.
Well, that's true, but that was I think that was a couple of election or one election ago. Hey, listen, Blue, I'm out of time. Hear that music in the background? That means we're flat out of time. I appreciate you checking in, though. Take care, pal. Be careful. Watch out for polar bears. I'll see you Monday night, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney. Wherever you are. I'm going.